Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Adams Row Band for that musical introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We've been looking at an essay that has been posted by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on its official website, LDS.org, an essay titled Translation and Historicity of the Book of Abraham. This is not the first essay that they have posted that addresses what are really controversial issues within Mormonism, but one thing that we do find that parallels all the others is we don't know who wrote this. There are no names given for the authorship of this essay. And like all the other essays that deal with the Book of Abraham and the race and priesthood and issues like that, we don't know who is behind what we are reading on LDS.org. You would think that this would be a perfect opportunity for the leadership of the church to set the record straight. But no, they tend to hide in the shadows and allow their scholars to do all the work for them. Here again is what I call that odor of plausible deniability. If any mistakes are found in the essay, certainly you can't attribute them to the leadership of the church. No, it must be the mistakes of an anonymous scholar.
At the same time, though, Bill, by putting it on the official website, that gives it credibility, I think.
I would agree with you because the church itself has said that when something is found on an official website, you can take it as being an official position of the church. But yet, even though the website says that, come on, Eric, you and I both know that when you try to get a Mormon to agree with what the church has actually said on this issue, we still have Latter-day Saints that don't want to blame the church for what appears to be a huge and glaring error.
I want to give the LDS leaders an invitation to speak on the Book of Abraham at the next general conference. That'd be a great topic to maybe discuss the essay and to verify as a leader to tell us that this is really what you believe and let people know the whole truth, because I don't know how many people would actually go look up the Gospel Topics essay. I've talked to a lot of Mormons in the last few months who I've asked them, have they seen those? They don't even know what I'm talking about. And it's not at the front of the website. You have to kind of know where to go. You have to know the titles of these things to be able to even find the articles.
Wouldn't it be interesting to have a Mormon general authority get up in general conference and explain the word translation as it's being used now in the Mormon church, as opposed to how many Mormons have come to believe it? Now, to their credit, the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, which we read yesterday, that came out in the mid-1990s. So if a Mormon has drawn the conclusion that the Book of Abraham is really an English rendition of the text found on the papyri that Joseph Smith had in his possession, I can understand how he can do that. But at the same time, I think the church would say, well, that's your fault for believing that, because we're not saying that. And since 1992, we know, at least with the Encyclopedia of Mormonism, they have made a reference that it is an inspired rendition here. It's inspired, which mainly means don't expect any real tangible connection between what Joseph Smith says in English and what the papyri had written on it. But if that's the case, then what is the big deal about the papyri? It seems to me that the church wasted $2,400 buying them off of Michael Chandler. You didn't need them in the first place. Just have Joseph Smith go in some darkened room with a candle somewhere and let him just write whatever he wants to write along that same theme. There's no correlation between the two anyway.
I think a lot of Mormons don't think of it that way, but now that you put it that way, if you're a Latter-day Saint, I would think that would have to bother you that the papyrus wasn't even needed for the translation.
And it does bother a lot of people. And why does it bother them? Because a lot of Latter-day Saints do believe that it's an English rendition of what the Egyptian was saying on the papyri that Joseph Smith had in his possession.
Which just begs the question, why would Abraham, he did spend a little time in Egypt, but why would he have written in Egyptian? It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever, because the Egyptians were the enemies of the Hebrews.
In the opening paragraph of this essay, Translation and Historicity of the Book of Abraham, it says, "This book, a record of the biblical prophet and patriarch Abraham, recounts how Abraham sought the blessings of the priesthood, rejected the idolatry of his father, covenanted with Jehovah, married Sarai, moved to Canaan and Egypt, and received knowledge about the creation. The Book of Abraham largely follows the biblical narrative, but adds important information regarding Abraham's life and teachings." That last sentence is amazing to me. If you have any knowledge of the book of Genesis, are we to really take that last line seriously, Eric? The book of Abraham largely follows the biblical narrative, but adds important information regarding Abraham's life and teaching. Now, no doubt it does add information. How important it is, I don't know, because if it's not true, it certainly isn't important. But regarding Abraham's life and teaching, but the part where it says the book of Abraham largely follows the biblical narrative, can we really draw that conclusion just by looking at Abraham chapter 4?
Well, you know, on the website, we have an article on mrm.org/Book of Abraham Essay with hyphens between the words. And one of the things that I did in my research, I had never seen this before, so I wanted to do it. I wanted to take Abraham chapter 4 and Genesis 1, which it's basically going through verse by verse, as well as Genesis chapter 2 and Abraham 5, and I put them together. The verses are together so we can see what Genesis has versus what Abraham says. Let me start off with Genesis 1:1. We all know that verse, Bill. "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." Here's a rendition from Abraham 4:1. "And then the Lord said, let us go down. And they went down at the beginning, and they..." That is the gods,
plural,
"organized and formed the heavens and the earth." Wow.
And this pattern, the gods, is throughout chapter 4. We find it throughout chapter 4. For instance, verse 2, "the face of the deep and the spirit of the gods." 3, "and they, the gods, said." Verse 4, "and they, the gods, comprehended." Verse 5, "and the gods called the light day, and the darkness they called night."
And if you look at that on the website, you can go there and you can see how the verses go together. But that word is added in as far as the plurality of gods. Also, this idea of organized and formed the heavens. Mormonism does not teach an ex nihilo creation, but rather
out of nothing.
But rather ex materia. So ex nihilo, out of nothing, and then ex materia, out of substance that already has existed. And so organized, this is where Mormons get this idea from Abraham that it was all put together. How many times do we see the word organized in the Book of Mormon?
We don't. And that's what's interesting. I have a real difficult time believing, if the Nephites were real people, that they would have subscribed to what Joseph Smith is saying in Abraham chapter 4. You have to understand, folks, when we look at the book of Abraham, it goes completely on the other side of the spectrum, as we find in the Book of Mormon. The Book of Mormon certainly is monotheistic, basically, in the understanding of who God is, that there's only one God. In fact, it goes to a heretical extreme of modalism, where it actually identifies the Father as being the Son. Now, certainly that is a heresy of the early Christian church that was dealt with quite soundly. But in the Book of Abraham, we see Joseph Smith going to the other side of the pendulum and to a plurality of gods.
And so to say that they're the same, I mean, you quoted Abraham 4:3. Let me quote Genesis 1:3. "And God said, let there be light, and there was light." Well, he has the same verse, except he puts in, "and they, the God, said, let there be light, and there was light." So he takes the King James, and based on his 1835 new presupposition he didn't have, I don't believe, 5 years before, he adds the word gods in. The difference between polytheism and monotheism is a huge difference.
Well, let's just take what he says in in the Book of Abraham, chapter 4, and compare it to what the Book of Mormon says, we go back to Alma 11, and we've used this test many times when talking with Mormons, where you have the prophet Amulek talking to a lawyer by the name of Zizram, and Zizram says to Amulek, "Thou sayest, there is a true and living God." Now, why they're talking in King James English, that's a whole nother issue. But Zizram says to Amulek, "Thou sayest, there is a true and living God?" Amulek said, "Yea, there is a true and living God." Now, Zizram said, "Is there more than one God?" And what do you think the answer Amulek gives to Zizram?
No.
According to verse 29,
absolutely
he answers
not.
No. Yeah. There is not more than one true and living God. So we have to wonder, who are the gods, plural, in Joseph Smith's new rendition in this book of Abraham, chapter 4? Who are the gods, plural? And if there's only one true and living God, who among them is the one true and living God?
Well, and that's a good point you're bringing up. And as far as this idea of who they are, I mean, is this supposed to be Jesus? Is this us? I don't know. I mean, is he talking to gods that were before him? Who gets together in this council to be able to create the world?
Well, in Joseph Smith's translation, and I'm using that word very loosely, his translation of the Bible, he identifies in Genesis 1:26, where it says, "Let us make man in our image." Remember, that's the passage Mormons love to use, because they say, see, that proves there's a plurality of gods. And it also proves that God the Father has a body of flesh and bones, because that image is talking about their bodies. Well, the problem with that, folks, is Joseph Smith said that's a conversation between God the Father and the pre-incarnate Christ. Jesus didn't have a body. He didn't have a body at the time that conversation took place. So to assume that the word image is talking about a body of flesh and bones is certainly a presupposition of the worst kind, because Jesus wouldn't have had a body of flesh and bones at that time. And that's at the admission of even Mormon leaders. So how do you draw the conclusion that that's what it's talking about, where if there's two people in this conversation and 50% of them don't have a body of flesh and bones, how do you draw the conclusion that that's what it's talking about?
So this can't be referring to Jesus, and it can't be referring to us. But who those gods are, we don't get a lot of information.
Now, we're going to be looking again at this essay, Translation and Historicity of the Book of Abraham, in tomorrow's show. But again, I think it's important, Christian, that we have a little bit of a grasp of what the Mormon Church is trying to defend in this essay. Is it worth defending? Now, of course it is for the Mormon Church, because if it can be demonstrated that the Book of Abraham is a total fabrication, a fraud of Joseph Smith, that's going to cause the Mormon Church a lot of problems. But you know what? It's already causing the Mormon Church a lot of problems.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. All of us at Mormonism Research Ministry want to thank you for listening to Viewpoint on Mormonism. We are honored to provide effective information that hopefully encourages you to share your Christian faith with friends and loved ones. As with all missionary organizations, the generous support of friends like you is necessary for effective ministry. During this holiday season, would you prayerfully consider a year-end donation to MRM to help give us a much-needed financial boost into the new year? Your tax-deductible gifts are much appreciated and will be used to further our efforts at MRM.